We're going to start the session again, of course, with Vipassana meditation. So now we are applying our mindfulness to the mind, investigating the mind. And in the last meditation, we primarily did that in terms of looking at what's appearing in the mind, if it was stable or whether it was continually changing. And we also looked at, is anything there in the nature of happiness? So in this meditation, we're going to again start by simply observing the mind as a shamatha practice. And then partway through, I'll ask you to investigate the mind. And we're going to look to see if anything there is a self. So that's going to be the Vipassana practice, but we'll bring that in about halfway through. So first, the beginning, just shamatha practice, observing the mind, as we have been doing this morning. Okay, so let's do the practice, finding a nice comfortable posture. Setting the body into a state of relaxation, stillness, and vigilance. Allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Allowing the mind to settle into the present moment, focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body. allowing the eyes to be at least partially open, vacantly resting your gaze in the space in front of you. And bring your attention to your own mind. And observe your own mind and whatever is arising in the space of the mind, without following it, without trying to get rid of anything. Be like an impartial observer or witness, observing mental events as they arise and pass, without grasping to them, without becoming distracted. can now enter into Vipassana practice. So continue to observe whatever arises in the mind. And now for anything that appears in the mind, ask the question, is this the self? Is this me, the observer? Or is it merely an object being observed? and the self, the observer, be seen anywhere. Or is all that is seen merely objects that are being observed? Any questions from that practice?
Oh no, everything's super clear.
Good. Well, we don't need to continue the text then.
Okay,
sure. Yeah.
I try to be like relaxed. I try to, maybe I don't feel very strong tension, but anyway, it should be
One thing is, often when people have that experience, they're actually sitting there thinking, there's no thoughts there. There's nothing there.
No, I sometimes say I'm like thinking what to do, but then I like catch, I just stop, like when it stops already.
Yeah, yeah. So, here, the trick is, and this is a little bit we mentioned briefly, and this is going to come up actually in the shamatha practice tomorrow morning in the text, is that there's this delicate balance between being too tight and suffocating the mind, or too relaxed and getting carried away. So there's a balance, and that's, I think, what you're saying, is that when you release the tension, then something comes up, but then you try and grab it, and it's gone again, because you're suffocating it. But what you will find, of course, is that if you can observe a mental event, then you're not feeding it, if you're not identifying with it. So what you'll find is, as soon as you look at something, gone. But that's normal. That's actually doing the practice well, because a mental event can only stay there if you're feeding it by either trying to suppress it or following it. If you're just watching, it'll just like this. So again, to have that, just work on that balance between too tight and too relaxed. And that's something that we're going to see in the text, is even fairly advanced meditators still finding difficult to find that balance. So that's something that we need to continually work with. But if you're not finding there's anything there, then just, as we mentioned already, every now and again, just generate a thought, deliberately generate something. Just generate something and then watch it. So you can do that as well.
Still have trouble understanding this. And in shamatha, we're kind of focusing on the bare attention of either the thoughts.
In shamatha in general, we have bare attention, whatever the object is. Yeah, that's right.
But I can't really understand how to combine in vipassana this bare attention with investigation of some specific quality of that attention, because to me it seems contradictory.
Sure. So we have the bare attention, which we can see the object clearly. So we have then an image, we have the object clearly, and then based on what we've seen, then we can investigate that. So yes, that is then not bare attention, because we are then investigating. But we have that, because we had the bare attention, we have a clear appearance of the object that we need to investigate. So it's like anything in life. If we don't have a clear appearance of whatever we want to investigate, and then we investigate, we're not going to be sure. Yeah. So it's a little bit like that. Okay, let's go back into the text then. So we're on page 5. Second paragraph, which says, through focusing on what type of object of meditation does one cultivate concentration? Although the Bhagavan, and Bhagavan here is another epitaph for the Buddha, so if you ever see the word Bhagavan in a Buddhist text, it means the Buddha. Although the Bhagavan taught that in general there are limitless objects that are a suitable basis for accomplishing faultless concentration. So in a meditation text, shamatha text, you'll find quite a big list of objects that are possible to use for concentration practice, shamatha practice. It says, since most of the previous gurus of these instructions accept focusing on the mind, here also this very method will be used. So just a little bit about objects that we can use. Now, in general, in the shamatha practice, the recommendation is use the object that works best for you. And then often in the shamatha text, it says things like, if you're the type of person who's highly discursive, meaning always thinking, then definitely the best object for you is the breath. And the breath is probably the object that's most widely emphasized in many Buddhist traditions. Because the physical sensations of the breath, by focusing on them, of course, we get out of our conceptual mind and into the body. So this is a good start. And most of our conceptual thinking is about the past and the future. Very rarely are we ever into the present moment. And from a Buddhist perspective, living in the past and future is a source of a lot of unhappiness. And some modern studies are coming to the very same conclusion. So the physical sensations of the breath, of course, only happen in the present moment. So by focusing on them, we get out of our conceptual mind and into the body, and out of the past and the future into the present moment. So very good. So for many of us, probably the breath will be the best object. And within the breath, of course, we have those three variations. We have the full body version, which is the one we're doing each evening in the corpse posture. And that is just noticing sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breathing. And this is particularly good for relaxation, particularly together with the corpse posture as we do each evening. So if you find in your practice that you have a lot of agitation and tension and you can't release it, then this would be a good alternative, particularly lying down in the corpse posture. Is just relaxing and focusing on the sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breathing. And then, of course, the other day we were working with the abdomen, the rising and lowering of the abdomen. Again, a fairly large area of focus. So this is good for improving stability of our attention because it's quite easy to focus on. And then, of course, yesterday we worked with the nostrils, a much smaller object, more subtle object. And because of that, it's very conducive to improving the clarity of our attention. So this is particularly good for improving clarity of attention. So this is, for many people, probably one of these variations will be the best object for shamatha practice. But of course here, we're in the Mahamudra system of practice, and Mahamudra, the main focus is the mind. So today, of course, we've started to focus on the mind as the object of shamatha practice. And probably a number of you found that more challenging than focusing on the breath, because the mind, of course, is a more subtle object. It's not some physical, tangible object. And also you may have found that when you try to focus on the mind, you just get completely swept away, because that's our habit. So many people find this very challenging, but as we've already mentioned, a lot of benefits with this practice, in terms of it's a very healing practice, in terms of becoming the masters of our mind instead of being the slaves of our mind. And also, of course, here, by focusing on the mind and whatever is arising in the mind, then we can, as we go deeper into this practice, we can intuitively come to have some little experience or realization of the nature of the mind simply by observing the mind as a shamatha object. So this can be also a very good bridge into the vipassana practice. So this is what we've been focusing on today as the object, and this is what's recommended here in this text, of course, being a Mahamudra text. And then we're also, I think day after tomorrow, we're going to work with the third object. Which sometimes is called shamatha with no object, or sometimes it's simply called awareness of awareness. And in this practice here, we are simply, as the name suggests, being aware of being aware. Now, of course, when we're focusing on a particular object, let's say we're looking at this pen, then explicitly, of course, we're aware of the pen. Implicitly, we're aware of being aware of the pen. So all we're doing in this practice is making that explicit. is explicitly being aware of being aware. So in this practice, experientially, it's much more non-dualistic. In this practice, we often have a distinct sense of me, the observer, observing the mind as the object. So it seems it has a fairly dualistic flavor to it. Whereas in this one here, experientially, it's much more non-dualistic. There's not really a sense of being a separate, discrete observer observing the mind. It's more about being the mind, resting in the mind itself. Now, in this practice, and we're going to talk more about this the day after tomorrow when we get into this practice, and that is that in this practice, of course, many people find this very challenging, more challenging than the mind, not because it's complicated, but actually because it's too simple, because it involves effectively doing nothing. It involves being rather than doing. So people find this difficult because they always want to do something. What am I supposed to do in this practice? That's the problem. Doing is the problem. We need to just be present. Be. Just be. Be aware of being aware. That's it. And of course, in this practice, mental events will continue to arise. Thoughts and emotions and memories will still come up. But in this practice, we're not focusing on them as we do in this practice. We simply ignore them. Of course, we're not trying to block them, but we're not paying any attention to them. We're just being aware of being aware. And so we're going to speak more about that and practice that, I think, day after tomorrow. But in the Shamatha section coming up in this Mahamudra text, it talks about both of these practices. So we'll also see them in the text shortly, I think, on the next page. So these two are the objects that we're working with in the Mahamudra, and the breath is probably the most widely recommended object, and it can be a good basis for these. If we want to engage in these shamatha practices, but we can't even really get into them at all, because our mind is completely dull or we're swept away all the time, then we can begin with the breath practice and work with that for some time, maybe weeks or months or so. And once our mind becomes a little bit more stable and clear, then we can shift to one of these objects. But what's not recommended is that we keep swapping the object every day or every week, just keep swapping. That's not going to be very conducive. And on that point, Alan Wallace also has some recommendations about the what object to use. So again, I'll read from his book, Attention Revolution. And I think it was on page 6 from memory. He says, to guide meditators along these 10 stages, so the 10 stages, of course, are the 9 stages in the diagram plus shamatha, so he adds that to make it 10 stages. I have chosen from Buddhist teachings 3 techniques that I have found effective for modern people in the modern world. These 3 techniques are the basis for the 3 divisions of this book. For the first 4 stages, in that 9 stages there, you should practice whatever method you find easiest. By stage 5, the mind is relatively stable and you can move on to subtler techniques. For achieving the first 4 stages, I recommend the practice of mindfulness of breathing, variations of which can be found in Zen, Vipassana, and Tibetan Buddhism. Mindfulness of breathing means settling your awareness on the sensations involved in breathing, continually returning your attention there whenever your mind wanders. Beginning with the 5th stage, I recommend a method called settling the mind in its natural state. So that's the name he gives to the 2nd practice of observing the mind. In this technique, you direct your attention to mental experiences, all the events, that is, thoughts, mental images and emotions, that arise in the domain of the mind. This method is drawn from the Dzogchen or Great Perfection lineage, but is found in other Buddhist traditions as well. With the instructions for the eighth attentional stage onward, so that's the last two before shamatha, we move on to the still subtler practice of maintaining awareness of awareness itself, the third technique. The technique is called shamatha without an object. Here the practice is not so much one of developing attentional stability and clarity as it is of discovering the stillness and luminosity inherent in awareness itself. The training in mindfulness of breathing may be helpful to anyone, including those seeking to prevent or treat attention deficit hyperactivity disorders. Many people find the second practice, that of settling the mind in its natural state, to be more challenging, but some meditators take to it naturally. Likewise, the practice of awareness is subtler still, but it may be optimal from the beginning for those who are strongly drawn to it. You may use any one of these three methods to progress along all 10 stages of attentional development, or you may follow the sequence described in this book. How fast you progress will depend on the level of your commitment and the degree to which your lifestyle and environment support such practice. So this is what he's recommending. He's saying that any one of those can take us to shamatha, and or we could, as a beginner, for the first four stages, use the breath because not so difficult, and then move on to the mind practice, and then the last couple of stages do the awareness of awareness practice. That's one recommendation. Of course, we don't have to do that. We could start with awareness of awareness from the very beginning and use that all the way to shamatha. Any one of those three options is viable. But remember, as I mentioned before, the physical sensations of the breath can take us all the way to shamatha, but at some point we're going to need to switch to this, what's called the acquired sign, this mental image related to the air element that spontaneously arises. Any questions about the objects? Right. So often you'll find in the meditation texts, they'll list a few objects, and often the breath is one of the first ones they mention because it's easier. And then sometimes in the text they say, you can't even focus on the breath? Okay, start like this. Pick a stick or a pebble, put it in front of you and look at it as a starting point. But then they say, okay, do that for a while until you get a little bit better. Then instead of looking at the stick or pebble, have a mental image of the stick or pebble and move forward. So a visual object could be, like a sound, could be a starting point. But it won't get us that far because a very coarse object. So it could be a good starting point if we can't even begin here. But then we'll need to move on to a more subtle object. So you could, like, listen to a sound, repetitive sound, or even maybe chant a mantra or something, as a very starting point, but then we'll need to go beyond that if we really want to go further up those nine stages. Also, in the Tibetan tradition, any of you who've studied the Lam Rim, of course, the stages of the path, when you get to the shamatha section of the text there, often what's recommended as the object for shamatha practice is a mental image of a Buddha. To visualize a Buddha, a certain height and the space in front of you, and maintain that image. And of course, it's very complex visualization. So many people find this extremely difficult because a Buddha is not something we're used to, we're not familiar with, and many of us have difficulty with visualization in general. But of course, there's a lot of benefit in doing that, using a mental image of a Buddha. Some people actually are very good at visualizing, so any of you who are very good at visualizing, that may actually be a very good object to use, because by using that object for shamatha and becoming familiar with that, you're setting yourself up well for tantric practice, because in those two, generation and completion stage, particularly generation stage practice, involves a lot of visualizing ourselves in a fully enlightened form and visualizing deities in front of us. So if you already familiarize yourself doing that in shamatha, then you already have a flying start to the generation stage practice. But the reality is, I think many of us find that very difficult because it's very complex visualization to hold that. So that's also a possibility.
Is it possible to do like a combination, use a combination of objects? For example, in the morning you do breathing meditation, in the evening you do awareness of awareness?
If we are wanting to really move along some of these stages and practice this in a deeper way, then this is probably not recommended. Because we're swapping between objects. And then we'll become the master, the jack of all trades and the master of none. Having said that, what we can do, though, is if, let's say, we're using the mind as the object normally, but then in a particular meditation, we're very agitated and tense and we can't release it, then in that meditation, we could drop back to the full body practice to release the tension and to relax, and then go back to the mind. So that is quite okay. You're using then this as a way of relaxing, and then you can go back to the object. But, you know, of course, as a beginner, if you want to use the breath in the morning and this in the evening, that's okay. But if you're really wanting to put effort into going further in shamatha practice, it's better to just focus on one object. Any other questions about the objects?
So this is sutra level Mahabhudra, yes. So if we, by any chance, someday you move to Tantra level, then you will be able to match it?
Yeah. So in Tantra level, often the shamatha practice comes within generation stage practice. And it's called subtle generation stage practice. The sort of initial level generation stage practice involves a lot of, sadhana practice, visualizing, chanting mantra. But then when you go to what's called subtle generation stage practice, it's effectively shamatha practice. And what you do there is you visualize a mandala. A mandala is like a representation of an enlightened world. And some of these mandalas, and often you see the two-dimensional drawings of those, but here, of course, we do 3D, and some of these mandalas have, like, the deity in the middle, all sorts of elaborate buildings. They may have hundreds of deities around them. I think Kalachakra has 600 or something in the mandala. So the object is a complete mandala, visualized this big, this size, a complete mandala in one of the chakras. That's the object for shamatha practice. Not so easy. So maybe we can start with this. Okay. Sure. Right. Okay. Yes, often here in these practices, there's a number of analogies to help us understand the practice. And sometimes the analogy used here is the analogy the mind is the sky and thoughts are like clouds moving through the sky. That's one analogy. Here, and so then we're sort of observing the sky of the mind and observing the thought, the clouds of thoughts moving through it. That's the analogy. Here, it's more about being the sky, not looking at the sky. It's more, this, the analogy here is like being the sky, merging with the sky, like that sometimes. Vidya. Well, there's many words here. See, this word awareness can mean many things depending on the context. But in general, the word awareness, often in Sanskrit, vidya, means knowing. In Tibetan, rikpa, vidya, it just means knowing, the knowing.
So rikpa in this context, it's the same as in dzogchen?
No. So, see, this is where we have to be very careful. Rikpa can also just means knowing. So when we talk about the mind, and we're going to see this actually coming up soon, we're going to talk about the clear and knowing nature of the mind. That knowing is rikpa. That's not talking about... But in Dzogchen, when they use the word rikpa, they're not meaning that. They're talking about the very subtle mind. This, what we in Tantramam would be called luminosity. And we had those other names, primordial mind, uncontrived mind, indestructible drop, all of these things. This is rikpa in Dzogchen. So we have to be careful when we see these words, the context. Otherwise, a lot of confusion. So we're not talking here about the rikpa in the sense of what in Dzogchen, of primordial mind. Of course, through this practice, we're trying to get down to that in the tantra level of practice. But here, we're not talking about that. Okay. Then if we continue on in the text... So we're now in the practice, of course. It says, within that state of fleeting appearances. So what this means is that, of course, just prior to this, so we're actually in the shamatha meditation now. Remember, at the beginning of the shamatha practice, we prepared ourselves well by getting a good posture, going for refuge, generating bodhicitta, all of those things, and then at the end we made all these requests to our teacher, to the guru, and dissolved them into ourselves. And through that, then our mind should now be very uplifted, very positive, in a state ready to meditate. And that's why it's called the state of fleeting appearances, because we've done that preparation, so we're not sort of caught up in all sorts of thoughts. That's why it's talking here about fleeting appearances. It says, do not alter anything by discursive thoughts, such as hopes, thinking about accomplishing certain goals, or fears concerned about whether or not certain undesirable things will eventuate. So that's often what we do, of course, when we come into the meditation. We're full of expectation of hoping to get something, or we may come in and go worrying about not being able to do it or having some sort of bad experience or something unpleasant coming up. So we are to let go of those hopes and fears. And then it says, without wavering, that is, without dwelling in the past, without anticipating the future, and without moving around in the present, rest in meditative equipoise. So meditative equipoise here means, again, balance. So rest in a balanced way within that state for a short while, meaning that, as we mentioned, to keep the meditation sessions short, emphasizing quality over quantity. And here in the Mahamudra system of practice, there's very nice little, I don't know if you could call it a text, but it's called the 6 Words of Advice from Tilopa. So I thought I'd mention that because it has a very strong parallel to this paragraph here. So these are 6 words of advice that Tilopa gave to Naropa. It's basically 6 words. And so they are... The first of those is don't recall. And that means to let go of what's past. So that's what we see in the paragraph, without dwelling in the past. Let that go. Don't recall. The second piece of advice he gave to Naropa is don't imagine. And that means to let go of what may come. It means don't anticipate the future, don't jump into the future. In particular here in meditation, of course, this takes the form of expectation, so let go of expectation. The third point is don't think. And don't think is let go of what is happening now. It means don't get caught up in present stuff. Which is in that paragraph, it talks about these three is without dwelling in the past, without anticipating the future, and without moving around in the present. That's this one here. The fourth piece of advice he gives is don't examine. Which is don't try to figure out anything. The fifth piece of advice he gives is don't examine. Oh, sorry, that's the fourth. The fifth one, sorry, is don't control, sorry. And don't control means to don't try to make anything happen. And that's here in the text, you see, it says, do not alter anything. So don't try to make anything happen. Don't alter anything. So often in these Mahamudra things, it says, don't change anything. Don't fabricate anything. Don't try to make any changes. And then the last is rest. Which here is to relax and rest. And we see this in the text here where it says to rest in meditative equipoise within that state for a short while. So these are six pithy instructions that Talopa gave to Naropa on Mahamudra meditation. So I think that's sort of sums it up. So here then, at the beginning, then again, not to go into this meditation with hopes and fears, expectations. We're not trying to fabricate something. We're not trying to make something happen. We're simply resting in the present moment in this balanced state. Okay, maybe we'll stop there because it's dinner time. Because the next section is quite a lot to say, or a fair bit to say. So let's leave it there. Have some dinner and we'll come back this evening. And I think this evening in our compassion wing of practice, we're going to look at the empathetic joy practice and then also look at how to cultivate bodhicitta. So that's this evening. So let's have dinner and come back at 7:30.